Hello, this is Nicolene Ambrose reading the Tri-County Journal for Moultrie, Douglas, and Coles Counties, the June 17th edition. First article from the front page, Tuscola residents bring Black Lives Matter demonstration to town, by Kendra Hennis. Following nationwide protests of police brutality in the Black community responding to the death of George Floyd, Tuscola residents have brought the peaceful protest to the corner of Prairie and Route 36. What began with one man alone on a corner turned into a group of 30 in less than a week. Protesters ranged from all ages and demographics, with some even traveling to be part of the cause. I had the opportunity to stop by and ask some questions, and this is what they had to say. Les Evans, senior minister at First Christian Church, said, "I am protesting because it is way past due for me to stand in the gap so the people of color in this world know where I stand as a white Christian leader. As a Christian minister, our congregants who are Black or brown need to know if their preacher is with them or not, especially in a small white town. They will know I am with them with my voice and with my actions. My son is Japanese and one of my daughters is Black. I want their world to be different than the one we are in. We can be and do better. I also want to stop disappointing my friends of color by remaining silent and complacent. The Black people in our circles need to hear us say the words, Black Lives Matter, without correction or addition. Our incessant need to get one more word in is because we love to control the narrative in white America. It's like the spoiled kid who tries to have the last word with mom and keeps talking over her. We need to say Black Lives Matter and then stop from whatever else we were about to say next. Just say the words, communicate the idea, demonstrate that you believe Black lives actually do matter so people will know they are loved." Marnie Leonard, 2014 graduate of TCHS and former gender and education specialist at the United States Peace Corps, said that they decided to bring the protest to Tuscola because "we want to start a dialogue about racism and white privilege in Tuscola." When protests after George Floyd's death started happening all across the country, it seemed like the conversations being had everywhere else about Black Lives Matter, police brutality, racism, and white privilege were not being had in Tuscola. Tuscola is a predominantly white town, and as white people, we really need to reckon with our own complicity in systemic racism. We tend to be really undereducated when it comes to the racist past in the U.S. and how our racist past has created a racist present. I include myself in that because I am still learning every day, but that's what we're asking of people. Be active and intentional about educating yourself to become truly anti-racist. We are posting resources for folks to self-educate on our new Facebook group, Tuscolians for Racial Justice. So head there if you aren't sure where to start. The peaceful protests have been mostly organized by the youth and young people in Tuscola. Kathy Mannin said that young people have done this work. Youth who live in our community and young adults who live in or are from our community have done the organizing. It's important to highlight that this started with one person who had something to say and stood up publicly and said it. That had to take an incredible amount of courage. And then someone else saw him, supported what he had to say, and joined him. And it slowly grew from there. I think this is a good example of how one person can affect change. Mannin says it is important for people to support the cause because racism is pervasive across our country. There is no community immune from it, including ours. We need to start having community conversations about race, racism, and how to be anti-racist. These are hard, uncomfortable conversations, but we have to be willing to sit in our discomfort, listen to understand, reflect on why we are uncomfortable, and what we can do about it. I am by no means an expert. I understand racism differently now than I did even just 4 years ago. I understand it differently because I've worked at it. I've taken the opportunity to look at our country's history more critically from the perspective of people of color. Their historical experiences are different from the historical experiences of white people and have been for 400 years. History is often told from the white perspective. We conveniently leave out or minimize the historical and ongoing harm that has been done to people of color because of policies, practices, systemic structures, and institutions. TCHS Junior Alyssa Williams said it was important for her to stand up for the cause because in a town like Tuscola, where diversity is lacking, I think racism is overlooked and many community members won't even acknowledge its presence here. I will always stand out in this town, so I might as well send a good message while I have their attention. The group said that the community reactions have been mostly positive, with many honking, waving, and giving thumbs up. Leonard joked that on Tuesday they had more water than they knew what to do with. Manon said, "I think there are a lot of people in Tuscola who recognize the injustices and inequities that are both historical and ongoing. And I also think that for a lot of people, while they recognize it, they may not know what to do about it and feel powerless. Standing together on the corner of Route 36 and Prairie and publicly lifting our collective voice to speak against racism and violence against Black people is empowering." Other ways we were supported included people dropping off bottled water to help demonstrators stay hydrated, along with popsicles and ice cream treats. We did, however, receive some profane and vulgar comments from people driving by. And yes, some of those comments were made by people who live in our community. The fact that they were willing to say those things to young people in our community should outrage all of us. We have some strong youth leadership in Tuscola. They have a lot to say, and we need to be listening to them. They will notice who stands with them and who stays on the sidelines. Leonard says it is important for others to support the cause because Black Lives Matter and All Lives Matter are not opposing viewpoints. No one is saying that all lives don't matter. We're simply advocating for Black lives because Black lives are disproportionately endangered due to the racist systems we have in place, and undoing a racist system starts with yourself. We should all be doing everything in our power to actively combat racism, including donating to funds that support communities of color if you're able, demonstrating protesting if you're able, engaging in productive conversations with family and friends, and educating yourself on how to be anti-racist. We have resources on how to begin doing these things on our Facebook page, Tuscolians for Racial Justice. The group has another protest scheduled for Sunday, June 14th from 4 to 6 p.m. You can also get in contact with them on their Facebook page. Editor's note, the comments of Kathy Mannins are her own and are not on behalf of the Tuscola School Board. The next article, also from the front page, EIU selects Dr. Ann Flaherty as next Vice President for Student Affairs. Eastern Illinois University has selected Dr. Ann Flaherty as the university's next President for Student Affairs. Eastern Illinois University has a long-storied tradition of creating wonderful relationships with students, and I am looking very forward to being part of the EIU community and contributing to EIU's rich culture, Flaherty said. EIU takes its commitment to students, including diversity and engagement, very seriously. Student affairs is a large part of that commitment, and one I'm proud and excited to lead in these efforts. Flaherty added that she is also an advocate for holistic health and student well-being, as well as creating inclusive communities where all students feel respected and safe. This is my commitment to students and their families and will be my highest priority, especially important in these difficult and uncertain times. EIU President Dr. David Glassman said he is looking forward to Flaherty's anticipated contributions. We're absolutely thrilled that Dr. Flaherty will be joining our team here at EIU, Glassman said. Her broad expertise and career experience will benefit EIU and its diverse student population, and we're very pleased to have her join us in her leadership capacity as Vice President of Student Affairs. Flaherty comes to EIU from Washington University, WashU, in St. Louis, where she served as Senior Consultant for the Division of Student Affairs. In that role, she provided direct support and project management to the division, assisting under-resourced and first-generation students, coordination of emergency protocols, and overseeing the emergency student fund processes. Prior to her senior consultant role, Flaherty served as WashU's Interim Associate Vice Chancellor for Student Support, where she oversaw student support functions intended to provide a holistic approach to student well-being, including student-based physical health and promotion, mental health and wellness, and medical and pharmacy services as a direct report to the Vice Chancellor for Student Affairs and member of the senior leadership team. At WashU, Flaherty also served as Interim Assistant Dean of Students and Director, where she offered consultation and follow-up services for relevant parties and high-risk students. Prior to her time at WashU, Flaherty also held roles as Dean of Student Life in the Division of Student Affairs and Interim Vice President for Student Affairs and Dean at Butler University in Indianapolis. She also served as Assistant Dean for Medical Student Affairs at Indiana University School of Medicine and has held a variety of student affairs and instructional positions throughout her career, including at the University of Kansas and Park College University in Missouri. As an executive leader, Flaherty has been responsible for institutional decision-making and strategic planning initiatives related to budget, campus climate, student life, risk management, safety, enrollment, retention, and campus programs and services. She also has been heavily involved with NASPA, N-A-S-P-A, an organization comprising high-performance student affairs administrators that drive innovation and evidence-based student-centered practice throughout higher education, both nationally and globally. Throughout her career, Flaherty's focus has been creating and sustaining student-centered, inclusive communities through strategic, collaborative partnerships with faculty members and academic affairs professionals that reinforce opportunities for student success. As a student affairs leader, she has intimate knowledge of Title IX compliance issues, a strong understanding of student conduct and community standards, and a commitment to fulfilling federal and state obligations for protecting student privacy and confidentiality rights. As a long-serving student affairs professional, Flaherty has dedicated her time to countless programs and services intended to serve and empower students to thrive in a supportive higher education environment. Flaherty earned her PhD in higher education administration with a minor in health policy and management from the University of Kansas in 2011. Flaherty has also earned an MS in Higher Education Administration with a concentration in Student Affairs, University of Kansas, and a BS in Psychology with a minor in Sociology, University of Iowa. Flaherty currently resides in Zionsville, Indiana, with her partner Steve and three sons, one of whom is a first-year college student. A lifelong Midwesterner raised in Southeast Iowa, she is proud to be an active member of the various communities she has resided in and looks forward to doing the same as a new resident in Charleston, Illinois. Flaherty's new role as Vice President of Student Affairs at EIU will begin in late July. She will replace Lynette Drake, who has plans to retire in July after a 33-year-long career in EIU's Student Affairs Unit, and who has twice served the university as its interim vice president of student affairs in 2005 and again from 2016 to 2020. For more information about EIU or to learn more about its growing assortment of programs and services, visit the university's website at www.eiu.edu or call EIU's public information office at 217-581-7400. Next, the obituaries. Dennis P. Winkler. Dennis Paul Winkler, 74, of Morton, Illinois, passed away on Monday, June 1, 2020, at Unity Point Methodist, Peoria. Family graveside services were held at 2 p.m. Friday, June 5, 2020, at the Tuscola Township Cemetery with Reverend Kenneth Redder officiating. Donald C. Coyle. Donald Carroll Coyle passed away on Sunday, May 31, 2020, at his residence in Kiefer, Oklahoma. A celebration of Don's life will be held at a later date. Betty J. Brown. Betty Jean Brown, 96, of Tolono, formerly of Hammond, Decatur, and Forsyth, Illinois, and Riverview, Florida, passed away peacefully Saturday, June 6th, at Arbor Rose of Tolono. A visitation and celebration of life will be held at a future date because of the COVID-19 worldwide pandemic. In lieu of flowers, donations may be made to the Hammond United Methodist Church in memory of Betty Brown. Hillegas Schrader Funeral Home, Atwood, Illinois, is assisting the family with the arrangements. Harvey Otto. Harvey Otto, 73, of Humboldt, Illinois, passed away at 4:32 p.m. on Monday, June 8, 2020, at the Arthur Home. Funeral services were held at 9 a.m. on Friday, June 12, 2020, at the Hick West Building, 1 mile south of Arthur, Illinois. Bishop Philip Schrock officiated. Burial will be held in the Miller Cemetery in rural Arcola. The Edwards Funeral Home is assisting with arrangements. Ronald E. Hance. Ronald Hondo Edward Hance, 76, died at home on June 2, 2020. A celebration of life will be held at a future date. Arrangements are by Joins Funeral Home, Newman, Illinois. The next article, First Mosquitoes Test Positive for West Nile Virus. The Illinois Department of Public Health, IDPH, has confirmed the first mosquitoes to test positive for West Nile virus in Illinois for 2020. North Shore Mosquito Abatement District collected the positive mosquito batch on June 5th in Evanston, Illinois. No human cases of West Nile virus have been reported so far this year. While we continue to battle the COVID-19 pandemic, we must also remember to take steps to protect our health from other illnesses, said Illinois Department of Public Health Director Dr. Ngozi Ezike. Getting outdoors is a great way to combat being cooped up, but you need to take precautions to protect yourself from mosquitoes and the viruses they carry by wearing insect repellent and getting rid of standing water around your home. Monitoring for West Nile virus in Illinois includes laboratory tests for mosquito batches, dead crows, blue jays, robins, and other perching birds, as well as testing sick horses and humans with West Nile virus-like symptoms. People who see a sick or dying crow, blue jay, robin, or other perching bird should contact their local health department, which will determine if the bird will be picked up for testing. West Nile virus is transmitted through the bite of a Culex pipiens mosquito, commonly called a house mosquito, that has picked up the virus by feeding on an infected bird. Common symptoms include fever, nausea, headache, and muscle aches. Symptoms may last from a few days to a few weeks. However, 4 out of 5 people infected with West Nile virus will not show any symptoms. In rare cases, severe illness, including meningitis, encephalitis, or even death, can occur. People older than 60 and individuals with weakened immune systems are at higher risk for severe illness from West Nile virus. The first mosquitoes to test positive for West Nile virus in 2019 were collected on May 21st in Wayne, Illinois. Last year, 46 counties in Illinois reported West Nile virus positive in a mosquito batch, bird, and/or a human case. IDPH reported 28 human cases, although human cases are underreported, including one death. Precautions to fight the bite include practicing the 3 R's, reduce, repel, and report. Reduce. Make sure doors and windows have tight-fitting screens. Repair or replace screens that have tears or other openings. Try to keep doors and windows shut. Eliminate or refresh each week all sources of standing waters where mosquitoes can breed, including water in bird baths, ponds, flower pots, wading pools, old tires, and any other containers. Repel. When outdoors, wear shoes and socks, long pants, and a light-colored long-sleeved shirt, and apply an EPA-registered insect repellent that contains DEET, picaridin, oil of lemon, eucalyptus, or IR-3535, according to label instructions. Consult a physician before using repellents on infants. Report locations where you see water sitting stagnant for more than a week, such as roadside ditches, flooded yards, and similar locations that may produce mosquitoes. The local health department or city government may be able to add larvicide to the water, which will kill any mosquito larvae. Additional information about West Nile virus can be found on the IDPH website. Next article, EIU announces its 2020 Distinguished Seniors. 25 students earn recognition for academic and community commitments. Eastern Illinois University recently announced its 2020 Distinguished Senior Award recipients. Distinguished seniors at EIU are senior-level students who have enriched the university community with their active involvement in all facets of campus life. The Distinguished Senior Awards recognize those who have demonstrated outstanding character and leadership through academic achievement, campus, and community involvement, and/or extracurricular honors or awards. Recipients must be planning to graduate in the 2020 calendar year and have a minimum cumulative grade point average of 3.0 or higher. This year, EIU recognized 25 recipients of the award presented by the EIU Alumni Association. Those distinguished seniors included Haley Barker, BS Special Education, Chicago Ridge, Illinois. Brooke Bales, BS Special Education, Flora, Illinois. Katie Bridges, BS Biochemistry, Wapella, Illinois. Sierra Carpenter, BA English, Hanover Park, Illinois. Claire Conrady, BS Communication Disorders and Sciences, Lincoln, Illinois. Dakota Crowder, BS Early Childhood Education, Charleston, Illinois. Lindy Dockin, BA Psychology, Rockford, Illinois. Leslie Druk, BS Fashion Merchandising and Design, Highland, Illinois. Chanda Dulal, BS Computer Science and Mathematics, Kathmandu, Nepal. Megan Evans, BA Psychology, Double Major in Communication Studies, Litchfield, Illinois. David Fry, BS in Environmental and Physical Geography, Tuscola, Illinois. Alexa Gallione, BS Special Education, Naperville, Illinois. Gloria Gonzalez, BS Biological Sciences, Environmental Biology, Greenfield, Indiana. Carson Gordon, BA Political Science, Mattoon, Illinois. Benjamin Hahn, BS Biological Sciences, Germantown Hills, Illinois. Maya Hunter, Political Science, Double Major in World Languages and Cultures, Charleston, Illinois. Sophia Keith, BA Psychology, DuQuoin, Illinois. Logan Klepsig, BA Political Science, Charleston, Illinois. Sienna Mark, BS Health Administration, BSB Management, Salmon, Idaho. Haley Mitchell, BA Psychology, Woodland Hills, California. Haley Pierce, BS Special Education, Lockport, Illinois. Natalia Rivera, BS Special Education, Arlington Heights, Illinois. Imani Ryan, BS Family and Consumer Sciences, Lansing, Illinois. Amber Salutrick, BS Communication Disorders and Sciences, BA Foreign Languages, Lockport, Illinois. Victoria Wilson, BS Kinesiology and Sports Studies, Teacher Education, Toledo, Illinois. For more information about EIU or to learn more about its growing assortment of programs and services, visit the university's website at www.eiu.edu. And now, Memories and Musings by Sherry Sims. I had quite a scare the other day as I was driving home. I turned the corner just a block from the house and had only accelerated to about 20 miles an hour when the car shuddered simultaneously as it sounded like a metal rod shot through the rear end of the car. Each time the wheels turned, there was a loud scraping noise as if something was being dragged under the car. Since I was only two houses from home, I decided to pull into the driveway, which was a bit of an incline, and I figured whatever I had run over would be dislodged. It seemed prudent to stop in the drive where I had more light with which to inspect the back of that car, but to my amazement, I could not see any object stuck under the car, and everything looked fine. As I began to pull into the garage, the loud scraping noise returned, but I decided the car would be safer in the garage than left outside. Upon further inspection, I discovered that my right rear tire was flat, which would account for the shuddering and initial noises, but even after I crawled partway under the car, I could not see anything amiss. This is not my first flat tire, but my last one was 54 years ago on a little VW. When I purchased a VW, my dad made me learn how to use the tire jack, and he taught me how to change a tire, which was a great lesson because I had to use that knowledge at 2 in the morning on Route 36 as I was returning home to Decatur from Charleston after visiting hubby at EIU before we were married. As I stood in the garage and looked at my current car, which is much larger than the VW, I remembered that hubby had mentioned that the tire jack in this car was not as simple to use as the one I had learned on, and the replacement tire stored in the trunk was not the same size as the tires on the car. Now, I am not one to shy away from a challenge, but I decided that since my car was safe in the garage and I was still a bit shaken at my advanced age, I would let the experts take care of this situation. The following morning, my car was picked up by a delightful young man from First Class Wrecker. After 24 hours in the service department at Pilsen Auto, I was advised the car had a new tire, there had been no further damage to the undercarriage of the car, and it was ready to return home. As I was settling the bill, the service agent mentioned that they were shocked to see what had caused the flat tire, and I asked to see the object. Wow, it was the largest bolt I have ever seen. I do not know what it is called, but it was 6 inches long and as big around as my finger, with a big loop at one end. No wonder I had thought I had run over a metal rod, and thank goodness I was going slowly. I hope to never have this experience again. Two suggestions for those of you who are Brighton jewelry fans if you saved those cute jewelry bags and have wondered what to do with them. I have an idea for their use. I just turned two of them into a summer mask. Please do not forget to wash your cloth masks out every night. I read an article which suggested this safety measure, and I thought it sounded like good advice. I am not able to wear the purchased fiber masks. Many of them are treated, and I have discovered that I am allergic to them. And that's it for this week's Tri-County Journal. This has been Nicolene Ambrose reading with you, and I look forward to reading with you again soon.